And we're back from Washington as we look back on an astonishing year in the USA. A few months ago, a listener to Ian Dale at Drive texted the programme while I was on it and challenged me to say something nice about President Trump. Well, it's taken a few months, but I can finally answer the question. If it hadn't been for Donald Trump, I might never have met my next guest on the programme, Nigel Farage, host of The Nigel Farage Show on LBC. He is with me now. And I suppose we should tell listeners that when Nigel travels, and he travels all the time, your programme comes to LBC from our studios here in Washington and sometimes in other places. And it has genuinely been great fun getting to know Nigel. And now I get to turn the tables and ask him the question. So I want to probe here. I know you are an admirer of Donald Trump. You campaigned for him, much to Hillary Clinton's irritation. You were the first foreign political leader to walk through the doors of Trump Tower in the immediate aftermath of his election victory. But I want to find out just how far down the Trump train tracks you chug before you slip off into a siding. So why don't you start just by telling us, what is it that you admire about him?
Instinct. You know, he's not an Ivy League man. He's not an intellectual. He doesn't come from any of the conventional backgrounds these days that you would expect from a global leader. But he's kind of made his own way in life. He's the self-made real estate man from New York. He's the guy that took reality TV to astonishing heights in terms of people watching it and advertising revenues and all of that stuff. And I, do you know something? I'm absolutely, after nearly 20 years in this game, I am sick to death of the college kids. Straight out of Oxford, straight into Parliament. They're the kind of people that have been running the West for the last couple of decades, doing it, in my view, pretty badly. And I see a guy here who actually gets it. He sees there is a major change in Western politics that is taking place. And I admire him because I trust his instincts. I admire him for his guts. And my goodness me, he's strong as an ox, given the kind of opposition that he faces. So I think Trump's got it right. I think Trump sees the big change that's happening in global politics. And I think right now, and yeah, of course, he's a disruptor. I get that. You know, I guess in some ways, I've been a bit of a disruptor. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, when you want to change things, you know, you can't make an omelette without breaking eggs.
Well, he's certainly broken eggs. How worried are you for him, given that he's ending the year with historically low approval ratings? I mean, seriously historically low. And he's not been able to get that much done up on Capitol Hill, at least, despite enjoying majorities in both houses of Congress.
Yeah, it's been very difficult. I mean, look, let's face it. You know, just as in my country, Parliament and the establishment don't want Brexit to happen, there is still, here in Washington, most people, even in the Republican Party, have not reconciled themselves to Donald Trump being the 45th president of the USA. He has faced obstructionism from the judges. He now has this Mueller investigation, this special investigation into any supposed Russian links in the election. And it's there. It's drip, drip, drip. Negativity every single day coming out from mainstream media, and he's found it very difficult to pass much in the House. Against that, I would say, just have a think about his achievements this year. A massive reduction in illegal immigration into the USA. Hundreds of thousands of jobs back in manufacturing. And whatever his personal approval ratings are, and this is interesting, the optimism that he's created around the US economy, and you've seen those numbers too, they are growing by the day. You know, sometimes you don't have to like somebody to think they're good for your country. And I would look at the economic optimism figures more than his popularity ratings. You know, the US economy is now growing at 3.1%. In some states like Georgia, it's already 4.5%. From a British perspective, these are mind-blowing numbers. And I think with the tax reform that has now gone through the House, with the prospect of the repatriation of hundreds of billions of dollars into the US economy, we just could see growth as high as 4% by the end of next year. So actually, you know, yeah, it's been tough. yeah, he's had a lot of people against him, but he's got some real achievements this year.
You talk about the drip, drip, drip effect of negative media attention. What about the drip, drip, drip effect of Donald Trump going after American institutions, going after the courts, talking about so-called judges when they overturned his first attempt at a travel ban, having an awful relationship with another great American institution, the free press? Does he understand and respect the constitutional checks and balances that lie at the heart of American democracy? Because I'm not sure that he does.
Well, I think he's frustrated by them. I mean, look, you know, this guy has been for 50 years completely his own man. Mm-hmm. He has been the governor. He has been the boss. His decisions, you know, have affected the lives of thousands of people who work for him. He's not used to being told no. He's not used to being constrained. I'll tell you one thing that is really interesting. I understand what you say. He's rude to CNN and the BBC. And sometimes that Twitter feed is, let's say, towards the aggressive end of the scale.
Well, I was going to ask you, do you wake up in the morning with a sense of foreboding about what you put on Twitter?
I think, to be honest with you, all of us that work in politics and media wake up in the morning with excitement. I mean, what on earth is he going to do next? And there's nobody who's a friend of his or a supporter of his who hasn't perhaps intimated that maybe it's a wise thing for generals not to fight too many battles simultaneously. And I do, as a supporter, get frustrated that he's taking on everybody at the same time. And I think it would be, you know, I've often thought it would be wiser to stick to fewer contests. But the answer, of course, is he wouldn't have become president without Twitter. And he knows that. And I think he's a little bit cleverer than many of the media realise. I think what this man does is he uses diversionary tactics. Mm. He lights fires.
Without question.
Under issues. And whilst there's a blooming great big row going on over there, he's getting on with something over here. And I think, I think that people underestimate Trump. They look at his appearance, they hear the way he speaks, they criticise his lack of vocabulary, and frankly, there's a lot of snobbishness, you know, in this city. There really is a lot of snobbishness about his background, his lack of Ivy League education. But you know something? He's a smart operator.
All right, lightning round, because I still want to find out where you part company with him.
Yeah.
The firing of James Comey, the FBI
biggest
director.
Mistake.
Dumb.
The biggest single mistake that has happened within this time. I had Sebastian Gorka on my show on LBC a couple of months ago. And Seb was there in the White House for many months. And I put it to him that it's the biggest single mistake. He denied it. But yeah, look, Comey was behaving very badly. Comey was leaking stuff to the press. He wasn't behaving well. But it's that classic one, isn't it? Do you want somebody inside the tent or somebody outside the tent? And it was. And I think they should have lived with Comey. I think the president was... the president took the wrong advice. There were clearly two wings, two competing arguments within the West Wing, and I think he made a big mistake.
Are you not discomforted when you hear the president characterising some of those white supremacist marchers in Virginia earlier this year as very fine people?
I'm very discomforted that the American media has reached the point where a right-wing protest, within which there were some really very extreme and really horrendous people, but most of them weren't neo-Nazis. Most of them were concerned people. What really worries me...
Well, hang on a second.
What really worries me... But this is the point, isn't it? You guys obsess about right-wing extremists. What about left-wing extremists? What about these Antifa people who are very happy to be violent pretty much at any protest they go to? So what Trump said after Charlottesville is there was fault on both sides, and that is true.
But very fine people.
Look, I personally wouldn't want anything to do with the Richard Spencer the sort of neo-Nazi, white supremacist types that do exist here in the USA. They've always existed here, actually, in the USA. But to characterise absolutely everybody that objected to the removal of a Civil War statue as all being extremists would be wrong to.
Where are you on the president making an issue of predominantly black American football players who decide to kneel during the national anthem rather than stand?
I have to say, I looked at that tweet, all those tweets. I asked myself, why on earth is he getting involved in this fight? And I saw him win it. And he's won it in a huge, huge way. He's got public opinion firmly behind him. Nothing to do with whether people are black or white.
You don't think there was any racial motivation to that battle?
Absolutely none. No, absolutely none. I really mean that. Absolutely none. But again, you see, he has this extraordinary instinct. Even friends of his, like me, thought he was making a mistake going into that territory, and he comes out smelling of roses. It's remarkable.
All right, the environment. You look like a man who enjoys the great outdoors. Any second thoughts about his withdrawal from the Paris Climate Change Accords?
Well, I don't think that's necessarily a permanent thing. He felt that America had given too much compared to many of the other countries, so he's out. But I suspect with a better deal, America would be back in.
Drilling for oil in formerly protected lands and environments. It's been a great year for the oil companies here. Not such a great year for conservationists.
Well, do you know something? Whether it's drilling for oil or it's or back in the UK, it's fracking for shale gas. Ultimately, these industries provide many well-paid blue-collar jobs. And yeah, of course, there's a balance that we have to strike in every society. I think Trump feels, and I feel too, that maybe the environmental protectionists have had it a bit too much their way.
What about draining the swamp? He was going to be the man who was going to force all those awful lobbyists and corporate stooges out of Washington. K Street's the home of the lobbying industry. It is a stone's throw
well,
from
it's
where
booming,
we sit.
Of course.
I do not see restaurants and bars begging for business.
No, in fact, quite the opposite. And I've been here this week and I simply can't believe the size of the lobby here. It's massive. The one thing about Washington, and I see this a bit in Brussels too, with the sheer size of the buildings, the feeling of power, the aura. But when I see these buildings and meet these people in Washington, I realise that the one thing none of them want is change of any kind at all. And draining the swamp is a very difficult thing to do. And I would, be honest, on that he hasn't made any progress.
I want to talk about his situation with regard to America's role in the world. The State Department, many foreign policy observers in Washington believe, is a shell of its former self. Democracy promotion, open society reform, war crimes monitoring.
War. All America. No. I'm sorry. This agenda that has been pushed, not just by the neocons in the Republican Party, actually, but Democrats completely bought into this too. The Clintons and Blair, of course, in the United Kingdom. Democracy promotion is the name used for an endless series of foreign wars that have achieved, frankly, nothing. It's cost America $5.5 trillion since Afghanistan and going through Iraq and everything else. And I think it is very refreshing to now have a leader who is much more in touch with public opinion across the West. Going to war should be the last resort of a government, not the first.
But what happened to Ronald Reagan's shining city on the hill, the example for the rest of the world to follow? This is not an example for the rest of the world to follow because he's largely, in many ways, disengaged from the rest of the world.
I just don't buy that at all. I really think if you look at the speech he gave in Riyadh, which was his first foreign visit, there he was talking to some of the biggest Muslim leaders in the world, saying, I'm not against you guys, I want to work with you guys, but you must drive out of your places of worship those who wish us harm. I thought that was actually giving global leadership. I watched him in Warsaw. I watched him in Paris on Bastille Day. And, of course, the visit to China, where he conducted himself in a way that I don't think anybody here in this city could believe. He has conducted himself on the world stage very well indeed. And the message is, it's America first, but not to the exclusion of wanting to do the right thing globally. And I think America's standing in the world at the end of this year is much higher than it was at the start.
But how can you justify that position? I mean, America has traditionally, under Republican and Democratic presidents past, consistently sort of pushed a message of we're going to judge countries partly by their human rights positions. This is a president who seems to hew naturally towards leaders like Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines, President Erdogan in Turkey, Xi Jinping in China, Vladimir Putin in Russia. None of them paragons of human rights virtue.
No, well, in the name of human rights, we've gone to war all over the world. We've killed a couple of million people. And we've spent trillions of dollars. I would suggest to you that those like the Obamas and the Clintons and the Bushes who gave us this lovely soft message of peace and democracy actually achieved the opposite. And I think you have a president here who does not want to get involved in a whole series of foreign wars. The one thing he has done, is he's woken the world up to the threat that North Korea poses, and I think we should all be very grateful, actually.
All right, well, we'll see where that goes in 2018. Another thing we're going to be looking at is midterm elections here, and I want to talk, we talked earlier in the programme, about divisions within the Republican Party. Stephen Bannon, good friend of yours, building a coalition, he says, to battle Republican incumbents seeking re-election. That's a Trump-inspired schism in the party, isn't it?
Well, all parties have their divisions. All parties have their wings. Come on, look, let's be honest. I mean, the sort of Mitch McConnell wing of the Republican Party isn't particularly conservative in any way at all. Loathes Trump. And Steve Bannon, who, you know, is a very effective, very bright political operator, he wants to help the president. So, and remember, and this is important, that this is one thing a British audience doesn't get, that in America you can change candidates very much more easily than you can in our country because of a system of open primary elections.
But that suggests brutal months ahead for the Republicans, internally.
Could be. Yeah, I mean, look, it could be. I mean, what a bizarre situation it's been. And, you know, you've said this earlier, that you have a president in office with majorities in both houses here in Washington, and yet up until the tax reform it's been impossible to get anything through. So yeah, no, I do think the Republican Party is going to have to do a lot of navel gazing and soul searching over the course of 2018.
So you do chug quite a way down the Trump tracks. We found a couple of areas of discomfort for you. When President Trump comes to London, will you be at the airport to welcome him? Is he going to come on the Nigel Farage show?
Well, you never know about you. I will certainly ask him of that, there's no doubt. Look, I do you know something? The fact that Trump has not yet been to the one country in the world for which he has such a deep affection, which he does, and that's genuine, it's absolutely there, and, you know, I know that. I never disclose any details of conversations I have with him, but I can tell you that through his mum, his Scottish roots, his golf courses, his great respect for the British royal family, and that is absolutely sincere and genuine. The fact that the one country that he loves outside of America hasn't deemed fit to invite him on a state visit,
I've invited him.
Well, yeah, but it's all been very downgraded, I think. And he would never say so himself. Even he wouldn't say so himself. But I think it must be a big disappointment to him.
Well, Nigel Farage, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great Christmas. I will see you, no doubt, in the new year.
Oh, I'll be back. And there's a lot going to happen here next year.
Absolutely. I mentioned that Nigel travels a lot. I've been travelling a lot this year. And after the break, I'll tell you what you're not allowed to take through any airport in China. And here's a clue. Unless you own one, I bet you can't guess. Stay with us.